Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, December 3rd. We'll begin with an article, "At least 20 injured by Taylorville tornado. Storms also resulted in one death in Missouri." Residents in central Illinois on Sunday assessed the damage after rare December tornadoes, including one the day before that was a half mile wide, ripped roofs off homes in Taylorville, downed power lines, and injured at least 20 people. The severe weather in Illinois was part of a line of thunderstorms that raked areas of the central U.S. late Friday and into Saturday, killing one person in Missouri. The National Weather Service confirmed tornadoes in Illinois, Missouri, and Oklahoma, and at least three tornadoes were confirmed in northwest and southwest Arkansas, which largely caused property and structural damage. No injuries or fatalities were reported there. Peak months for tornadoes in much of the Midwest are April and June, according to the Weather Service, but at least 12 tornadoes were reported in Illinois on Saturday, including the Taylorville tornado, which has been confirmed. If the majority are confirmed, that would be the most tornadoes in Illinois in a December storm since December 18th and 19th, 1957, when there were 21. The Weather Service sent crews Sunday to survey the hardest-hit areas in Illinois, which included Taylorville, 25 miles southeast of Springfield. Photographs and video from Taylorville showed several businesses flattened, with residents wading into debris to salvage what they could. Some homes remained standing, but with gaping holes in the roofs or with no roofs at all. The tornado was on the ground for around 10 miles before it thundered through Taylorville, and the Weather Service was able to warn residents of its arrival 41 minutes before it actually struck. Chris Miller, a meteorologist at the service's Lincoln office, said in a phone interview on Sunday that advanced warning gave people critical time to take cover and may have saved lives. Assistant Fire Chief Andy Goodall, speaking to reporters Saturday night shortly after the storm pounded the city of 11,000, said at least 100 homes had major damage, including his own. And a Taylorville Memorial Hospital spokesman said 21 people, ages 9 to 97, arrived for treatment Saturday. Most were released within hours. Miller said three people remained hospitalized as of Sunday afternoon. Miller said preliminary estimates are that the Taylorville tornado may have been an EF2, which indicates wind speeds as high as 135 miles per hour. It could take several more days to know for sure. The Weather Service said Sunday that a strong tornado that developed from severe thunderstorms Friday night touched down in Van Buren, Arkansas. It was rated an EF2. About 10 minutes later, a second weaker tornado was confirmed less than 10 miles away near the town of Rudy, Arkansas. Damage surveys for the two tornadoes are ongoing, but officials said dozens of homes were damaged. Early Saturday morning, a third tornado was with estimated peak winds of 107 miles per hour, traveled about 8.5 miles through Spring Hill in southwest Arkansas. Its path was intermittent and mostly caused damage to trees and to some structures. Also on the front page, superintendent on way out, expected dismissal of Owen, assistance to be decided Tuesday from Urbana. Next year, Don Owen will be out as Urbana School Superintendent, and in the meantime, the man he succeeded will be temporarily assuming some of his duties. Owen said the announcement Friday that he and two other assistant superintendents will be replaced with interim appointments shocked and surprised him, as the board had not provided a written explanation. "I plan to retire from USD 116," Owen said, adding that he had spent nearly 30 years in the district. "I served with honesty and integrity and was fiscally responsible. I'm proud of the work we did." In a release early Friday evening, the board announced a slew of administrative changes. One day after Assistant Superintendent Samuel Biden was arraigned on criminal charges for allegedly trying to secretly record a closed school board session. In that same session, late last month on a Sunday, the board discussed the employment of Owen and Biden. Owen's contract was to expire after the 2018-19 school year. Now he, Biden, and Assistant Superintendent Catherine Barber are all to be replaced, contingent on approval by the school board Tuesday night. Under the changes outlined Friday, Preston Williams would come out of retirement to serve as interim superintendent. In a 26-year career in the district, Williams held numerous positions, including superintendent. He retired in 2013 and had an elementary school renamed in his honor 2 years later. The administrative changes come after a tumultuous start to this school year, which began with the district quickly transitioning to a much-debated method of student behavior management that relies heavily on restorative practices and eliminated deans from the middle and high schools. Some teachers, parents, and community members decried the speed of the transition and pointed to an increase of violence at both schools this fall as evidence that the district moved too quickly. Owen said that some of his work as superintendent has been to dismantle systems that create inequitable results for students of color, which is what administrators said prompted discussions of the disciplinary change earlier this year. It's not popular work, but it's work for our students. Owen, Urbana superintendent since 2013, and Barber will remain with the district for the 2018-19 academic year. But Jean Corder will serve as interim assistant superintendent for curriculum and instruction. And Gail Jeffries, who retired after 27 years with Urbana in a number of administrative roles, will assume Barber's title, assistant superintendent for human resources and professional development, on an interim basis. These changes in central office administration will in no way lessen the school board's unwavering commitment to achieving academic success for all of its students, officials said in Friday's statement. Dr. Williams and the incoming administrative team support continuing the work begun by Dr. Owen that is grounded in that commitment. Dr. Williams, Ms. Corder, and Ms. Jeffries all have proven records of working collaboratively and effectively with those within the district and the community. School board members won't comment on the moves before Tuesday night's vote. Also from Urbana, 7 years meant a shooting deterrent. 24-year-old admitted to firing 4 shots into occupied mobile home. Although he was specifically addressing a Champaign man convicted of firing a gun into an occupied home, Judge Tom Tafanis was really talking to many other young men as he imposed a prison sentence on Andrew Golding. The problem in our community is we have lots of young men armed with firearms, and they do the exact same thing. The deterrent factor has to come across loudly and clearly, Tafanis said on Friday. He then sentenced Golding, 24, of the 400 block of Briar Lane, to 7 years in prison for his first criminal conviction. He has been in custody for 7 months and was given credit for time served. Golding pleaded guilty in early November to aggravated discharge of a firearm, admitting that on April 17th, he fired 4 shots through the door of a mobile home on Cedric Drive in Urbana. Assistant State's Attorney Troy Lazar said Golding and his 2 co-defendants, Damian Shepard, 19, of Mahomet, and his half-sister Krista Shepard, 22, of Gibson City, engaged in a fairly significant amount of planning to decide to rob people they knew to have drugs. Golding was the only one carrying a gun. Lazar said that when the resident of the mobile home foiled their plan by refusing to open the door, an agitated Golding fired through it. One bullet entered and exited the house not far from where 3 men were inside. Another exited the house and went into a neighbor's shed where it lodged in a treadmill. Calling it an unbelievably dangerous and violent act, Lazar recommended 9 years in prison for Golding. The maximum he could have received was 15 years. Golding's court-appointed attorney, Ed Pirano of Champaign, argued for a community-based sentence for his client, who had no prior convictions. Pirano said Golding's mother testified about her son's steady employment, his care of his 5-year-old son, and how he helps her as she suffers from serious health problems. "We all do dumb things. Sometimes we're lucky and nobody gets hurt," said Pirano, who said his client had a drug and alcohol problem that needs treatment. Golding apologized to the judge, the victims, his family, and the community. "I regret my actions. I made a very irresponsible and harmful decision," he said, asking the judge to give him a chance. Tafanis acknowledged that Golding was unlikely to repeat his behavior and praised him for being employed and caring for his son. "It's fortunate he didn't hit anyone, but the circumstances surrounding this offense are absolutely outrageous," said Tafanis, who had earlier given Golding's co-defendants 4 years of probation for conspiracy to commit home invasion. He certainly did jump into the felony range with both feet by firing numerous rounds into a house. Although he sentenced Golding to prison, DeFantis said he was willing to recommend him for boot camp. If the Department of Corrections were to admit him to that program, it would mean about a 4-month sentence in a paramilitary setting. Same bank, same suspect. Robberies happened months apart in 2016. The panic look on her manager's face gave it away, Tabitha Lawless said. First Mid-Illinois Bank on Vine Street in Urbana was about to be robbed. She recognized him immediately just by the fact he had a mask on, Lawless said. Lawless and her manager were the only two inside the bank around 11:30 a.m. on July 16, 2016, when a man, covered in clothing from head to toe, entered with a gun in his hand demanding access to the vault. It was Lawless's first day working at the branch located a block south of Lincoln Square Village and the Urbana Police Department. I didn't know where the panic button was because it was my first day there. I was scared, but I think the adrenaline took over. Lawless said they did what the armed robber requested just as they were trained. They took him to the vault. He had his bag, and he was scooping the money as fast as he could, and he left the building. We ran and locked the doors, and he couldn't get back in at that point. Urbana Police Detective Betsy Alfonso said security footage showed the suspect lingering at the southeast corner of Oregon and Vine near a tree for about 10 to 15 minutes before the robbery, waiting for patrons to leave the bank. Lots of people may have seen him hanging around at that corner. It's a busy area with the farmers market going on. If they remember seeing someone that just was sort of out of place or just in general seeing someone at that stop, that would be important to note. After the robbery, the suspect removed the mask as he ran west from the bank through backyards. It was the second time in less than 3 months that a gunman had entered First Mid-Illinois Bank. The first holdup took place at 2:47 p.m. April 29th, the weekend of the Christie Clinic Illinois Marathon. Alfonso said employees saw the suspect walking on the sidewalk on Vine Street near the bank at 11 a.m. and again at 2:30 p.m. He brandished his handgun and pointed it at employees right away and demanded them to take him to the vault. He leaves the bank and runs south and then west out of the area. When he did exit the bank, he took off his orange ski mask and put a camouflaged baseball cap on when he was fleeing. Dramatic security footage available online shows the armed robber as he enters and leaves the bank with his gun drawn, just like the July incident. They were just very similar, Alfonso said. We're pretty certain it's the same person, did the same thing both times. The suspect's disguise has hindered police efforts. He wore gloves so there's no fingerprints were left behind either time. He also tried to disguise his voice. This is what police do know. He is a white male, aged between 30 and 50, with light-colored hair, thin to average build, and shorter in height. He wore basically the same clothes each time, blue or dark long-sleeved shirt, black gloves, black sunglasses, and carried a black shoulder bag. Only his pants and color of his mask were different. In the first holdup, he wore an orange ski mask and blue jeans. In July, he arrived in a black mask and black or dark blue athletic-type pants with a green stripe down both legs. Alfonso wouldn't say how much money the robber got away with in either incident. Neither would bank officials. Alfonso said police have pursued leads since the robberies, but they did not pan out. After each robbery, bank management made improvements in security. After the first robbery, we reviewed the position and coverage of our security cameras and made some enhancements there, said Alicia Walters, Vice President, Regional Deposit Manager, Decatur Region of First Mid-Illinois Bank. After the second robbery, we closed the lobby for several months and did construction. Now it is a fully enclosed teller line. There's a wall and bulletproof glass. We felt like with the two robberies, we're in an area it's a higher risk. Tellers are completely blocked off from customer interaction physically. Alfonso said no customers were in the bank either time and no one was hurt. But employees are victims of this crime. I don't think a lot of people realize that. It's a very scary incident, very traumatic for them, and it's not just the bank that's a victim. Lawless volunteered to work at the Urbana branch due to short staffing on that July morning 2 years ago. She was new to banking, having recently taken a part-time teller job at the branch in the Rural Kings store in Champaign. She said the trauma of the robbery has not impacted her negatively, nor has it stopped her from pursuing a career in banking. She was recently promoted to assistant branch manager of the Rantoul location. "I don't dwell on it anymore," she said, "because if I do, it affects my job. It affects how I perform. It affects what might happen if another robbery were to happen. I don't want to perform poorly at that point due to something that has already happened." Anyone with information is urged to call Detective Betsy Alfonso in Urbana Investigations at 217-384-2330. The Maine Police Department number is 217-384-2320, or you can remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers at 373-TIPS. Sheriff Clerk sworn in, Ammons to do honors for rest early today from Urbana. In a Champaign County courtroom packed with dozens of family members and friends, two of the county's new constitutional officers were sworn in Saturday morning. "This is the changing of a new era," Sheriff Dustin Howerman said. "I look forward to serving you and leading the sheriff's office in a new direction." County Clerk Aaron Ammons, the first African-American to hold that post, had another reason to smile. "I don't have to go through security anymore," he said. Both Democrats were sworn in at a brief ceremony by Presiding Judge Tom DeFantis, who said the county needed to have a sheriff ready to act on December 1st, the first day of his term. DeFantis said he swore in Ammons, a friend who has served on justice-related committees with him, so that Ammons can swear in the other new countywide office holders first thing Monday morning. County Executive Darlene Klopel, Treasurer Laurel Prussing, and Auditor George Danos. The new county clerk promised coffee and donuts for his staff Monday morning, then getting down to business. After Saturday's swearing in, Ammons said he planned to give his family a tour of his new environment and head to breakfast. His wife, State Representative Carol Ammons, parents, children, grandchildren, and siblings were among the beaming faces in the crowd to see the former Urbana City Council member and longtime community activist start a new chapter in his life. Ammons said that on November 9th, he officially took a leave of absence from his job at the University of Illinois, where he was a building services worker. "I will miss the people, my co-workers, and the people I served in those buildings." Harmon has also transitioned from his post at Lakeland College in Mattoon, where he was program coordinator and advisor for the criminal justice program and a part-time police officer. He was retiring Sheriff Dan Walsh has been great in assisting him as he becomes the first Democratic sheriff in the county in 84 years. "Since 2 days after the election, we have been meeting about 2 to 5 times a week," said Harmon, who served as a Champaign County Patrol deputy from 2007 to 2010. Harmon has bachelor's and master's degrees in criminology and a doctorate of education in community college leadership. His short-term goal, he said, is to increase morale in the office. More than a dozen deputies, correctional officers, investigators, and administrators were among those witnessing the installation of the new boss. Also present was his new chief deputy, Shannon Barrett, who is leaving her job as an Urbana police officer to be second in command at the sheriff's office. Harmon said his most pressing long-term goal is to consolidate the downtown jail with the Learman Avenue satellite jail, something he concedes may not happen in 4 years. He also has to make 2 promotions to sergeant this month. One of those will replace John Carlton, who retired last week as the sergeant over courthouse security officers after 26 years of service. The other is a needed upgrade for patrol as deputies switch to working 12-hour shifts in early January. And from the local page, U of I band plays on, but not like it did. The Illinois Marching Band has changed plenty in 150 years. For starters, band members didn't play at halftime of football games. Illinois didn't even have a team until 1890. They played mostly marches and for military and school functions, like when buildings opened. It started off kind of a ragtag group, Director Barry Hauser said. Back when it first started, it was very heavily devoted to military service here on campus, so they would play for a lot of military reviews, ROTC, and a lot of school functions. It didn't start playing for football because football hadn't started yet. The Illinois Marching Band was much smaller back then, with about 15 or 20 students. Women weren't admitted to the band until 1971. The first athletic events it played at were baseball games. That is to say, today's 3 p.m. 150th anniversary concert, this was on Saturday, will have a much different feel with 375 members blasting songs they played on the Memorial Stadium field at halftime. It's all of our season highlights. It's our halftime show, a lot of the music that we traditionally play in terms of Illinois music, and we usually throw in some extras along the way. The concert has been a staple for the Marching Illini for decades, but it recently moved from State Farm Center to Krannert, and this year is at a later date than in previous years. It'll still play many of the favorites that Illini fans remember, no matter how much the band has changed since its inception. It's kind of varied, Hauser said of the musical lineup. It's a concert we do just to kind of do as a celebration of the season as we wrap things up. CEO for three decades will retire from Champaign. Developmental Services Center's longtime CEO, Dale Morrissey, is planning to step down later next year. Leadership of the Champaign-based agency will be assumed by Danielle Matthews, DSC's current Chief Financial Officer and Executive Vice President of Support Services. The 64-year-old Morrissey has been with DSC for 40 years, serving for more than 30 years as its CEO. He first joined the agency as Assistant Executive Director, which at that time was the agency's second-in-command position. Morrissey said he'll step down as CEO in September, then remain on to work on a few projects part-time for a few months. After that, he plans to continue working with DSC as a volunteer and assist with fundraising. I'm as driven by the mission as I've always been, he said. Matthews joined DSC 11 years ago. Her replacement will be selected over the next few months. Then she'll work with Morrissey to help with a smooth transition. DSC provides services for about 1,200 developmentally disabled adults and children in Champaign and Ford counties. Among its clients are people with epilepsy, cerebral palsy, autism, Down syndrome, and other disabling conditions. Morrissey said he's stepping down to spend more time with his family and plans on pursuing his personal interests. The biggest challenge his successor will face will be the same one his agency has been dealing with for some time, which is funding. DSC has diversified its funding sources to be less dependent on state money, but state funding still accounts for about $6.5 million, or about half of the agency's budget. Along with his leadership of the local agency, Morrissey has been an advocate for people with developmental disabilities at the state level. He is the recent past chairman of the Illinois Association of Rehabilitation Facilities Board. And a few letters from Tom's mailbag. I have seen some work being done on the golf course at Stone Creek and assume that means it will be open in 2019. But has any announcement been made? In April, Spencer Adkins of the Adkins Group disclosed that the Southeast Urbana Golf Course might be closed after the 2018 season and repurposed into something else, such as a private golf course, a public park, private park, gardens, concert pavilions, horse stables, or other uses. Adkins, whose father Clint established the golf course and subdivision two decades ago, said the golf course had declined during that time. In Clint's vision, golf was the right thing to do in the long term, he said in April, but quite frankly, it's probably not now. It was at the time. But it looks like Stone Creek will survive for at least another year, he said this last week, unless he gets an offer he can't refuse. We will continue to run Stone Creek just as we have for the past 19 years, unless there is a really good reason not to. Stone Creek has also posted its 2019 annual membership rates online. So I'm flying in on I-74 last night, and I realized I'm now in the 60 mile per per hour zone. My GPS has not updated the new limit, and snow has covered the new speed limit signs, making them unreadable. If I can't read the signs, do I really have to obey them? No excuse, says Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz. Yes, you really have to obey the posted speed limit. Obstructed signs could be a reason why an officer might write a warning, or we may use our discretion in resolving the ticket, but the posted speed limit remains in effect regardless of the GPS update or the snow. On the other hand, if it is snowing so much that the signs are obstructed, it probably would not be safe to drive in excess of 60 miles per hour in the first place. How many traffic accidents were reported during the recent road construction on I-74 from Urbana to Ogden? There were 77 accidents reported for that segment from April 6th to November 17th, said Kensel Garnett, the Region 3 engineer with the Illinois Department of Transportation. During the same period in 2017, he said there were 35 accidents on that segment. It does appear that the construction project did contribute to a higher number of accidents. I heard CVS at Country Fair was going to build a new store where Chase is now at Country Fair. Are there plans for a new Chase Bank close to the original location? If there are, they haven't notified the City of Champaign. No building permit applications have been submitted for a new Chase Bank or a CVS. Is there a list of all the stores that have been in Marketplace Mall? My wife and I are trying to remember some of the places and couldn't Google a list. I couldn't find a list either, and Marketplace hasn't kept one. There are tenant changes every year. We do not have a master list of stores that have been at the mall, said Dennis Robertson, its general manager. Marketplace opened on October 15, 1975, when a Sears store that had been downtown Champaign moved a mile north to the new mall. It was fully opened on March 17, 1976. And a letter to the editor. Glen Park trees need attention. The article Urbana Couple Planting a Legacy by Helping Replenish City's Urban Forest on November 22nd reminded me that perhaps if the Champaign Park District watered the trees they plant in Glen Park, they wouldn't have to spend so much money and time removing and replanting. Peggy Close, Champaign. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, December 3rd. Please stay tuned.